Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. On today's show, Evan Demerle and I are going to talk about the Cavs-Raptors game, which the Cavs lost 115-109. A pretty competitive, pretty fun game for the most part that we'll dive deep into. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the All-Star stuff. And then at the end of the show, Wes Goldberg from Locked On Warriors and the Mercury News joins me to talk about Saturday's Cavs-Warriors game and what you can expect from a very different-looking Warriors team. That's all today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
He put him in cement boots, Colin Sexton for two.
Away it goes! Locked On playoff winner!
Cleveland! This is for you!
Okay, Evan, how's it going, buddy? How are you hanging in illness-wise? You're a little stuffy, kind of getting wading through this, but how are you feeling on this Thursday evening after a Cavs-Raptors game?
Well, I did tweet this that I don't think it's coronavirus. I do think it's a bad cold. So if the guys at the Chase Down podcast are trying to kill me, they could have done a lot worse. But you know what, Chris? Enough, I don't really want to talk about myself. I got to congratulate you, buddy. You're head coach of the Cleveland Browns, according to Google. Congratulations.
This is amazing. Can I just say that the guy who like first alerted you tweet, did you pull that picture from that guy?
No,
Or did Googled, you come on this independently?
No, I saw the tweet and I'm like, there's no freaking way. So I Googled Kevin Stefanski and then it's quite literally like your headshot that they use at Forbes and I'm sure at other publications, but
thank you. Shouts to my day job for a really nice headshot though.
Shouts to my day job. It's like, cause Google tries to give people like the simple picture of like who Kevin Stefanski is. And funnily enough, it's Chris's headshot right now. So head coach of the Cleveland Browns. I made it. I got a podcast with a real celebrity.
Jimmy Haslam, pay me all the money. I will just say the thing about this that is so weird to me when this first came up, this random guy whom I've never heard of before. I'm pulling this up, but his Twitter name is Scott Champagne, and this said, quote, "This is my favorite thing on the internet today. I Googled Brown's new head coach. The resulting image was dot, dot, dot. Surprising as I could not imagine that gentleman commanding a room full of NFL players, and it's me." That image is actually the author, C. Dimon writes of the accompanying at Forbes article. My guy, just stop being weird with me on the internet.
Yeah.
Like,
hey, people Chris, are weird it could on the also internet. Be like a it could be a compliment because my mom thinks Kevin Stefanski's cute. There's a lot of girls I know that thinks Kevin Stefanski's cute. I mean, I know you're a married man, but I guess it's flattering to know. So that for now, at least, Google thinks you're Kevin Stefanski. So the better part of if Kevin Love gets traded, you're officially Northeast Ohio's newest heartthrob. So, hey, congrats.
No. I my 16-year-old looking face really really vibes with this, and it'll all go away once they realize how that bloggers don't make very much money. Okay, so Cavs Raptors, they lose this game. Ibaka leads all scorers with 26. Love and Sexton both have 23. KPJ with another really good game, 13-3 off the bench. Some bad there for him. Garland had 16, and Nant with 13-9, one away from yet another double double. Evan, I got to say, this game was much closer than I expected. What were the big takeaways for you?
We were kind of touching on this, I think, last week, talking about when is Cleveland's seven-game skid going to end, and you said Detroit was a good chance, and I agreed with that. Now, long-term, looking at it, cause this Raptors team is really well-coached, and I don't really think Cleveland has much of a chance winning this game. And for a little while, it felt like that was par for the course, and I'm like, all right, well, let's just put it this way. I'm doing some basic math in my head right now. They were down, oh my goodness, I can't do it. They're down 4 at halftime, and which isn't terrible, and then Toronto outscored them by 8 points in the third quarter. So I started thinking like, okay, maybe Toronto's gonna pull away a little bit and this one's over. And I dump on this. I used to dump on the Raptors a lot when they were Cleveland's playoff threat. But I really like how this Raptors team is constructed, just long term. But jumping into the Cleveland things, like, I have nothing bad to say about the Cavs. Like, I'm overall just very happy with the performance across the board from, like, most of the key players in this game. Like you said, Kevin Porter had 13-3. Larry Nance had 13-9, one away from a double-double. Darius Garland, he was 7-16, and sometimes his shot looked a little shaky, but 16 points, led the team with 8 assists. Sexton and Love tied the team in scoring with 23 apiece. Sexton's actually starting to look better with his vision and everything. He's kind of like looking like he's trusting his teammates a little bit more, and the game's starting to hopefully slow down a little bit for him in that aspect, which is a refreshing sight. And Tristan Thompson didn't do a lot scoring wise, but he put up 12 boards, which is always good. And no, I have no qualms about this game. I have no complaints. Nothing really bothers me. I'm sure once I break down the nitty gritty, maybe that I'm gonna find like two or three things that like truly annoyed me. But no, I'm totally fine with taking this L because it was actually a surprisingly competitive game, and Toronto's a very good team, and I'll take that any day of the week.
Yeah, I think that's right. If I have a couple cool, like, kind of things come out of this one that I think are standout, it's number one, I thought Colin Sexton's passing, although it comes out as 4 assists and 4 turnovers, he made reads in this game that I thought were really nice. He had two pass in particular that didn't result in points, and I was like, he was not making those passes a while ago. He was helping move the ball late in the game, which is really nice. Garland had a couple of really nice passes in this one. When those guys are passing and when they're starting to figure things out, it allows you, I think, to get a little more excited. And I do think there's something that doesn't show up in the data, doesn't show up in the box score, that is going to make you feel really, really good about sort of what is going on with the team and what is how the different ways they're going to get kind of some, there's things are going to get a little bit better when you can have that happen. I think that that's just, frankly, a really nice positive to have. I think the other thing for me that stands out as a positive is I thought Kevin was pretty good for the most part in this one. The rebounding stuff was tough, and some of the defensive stuff was a little tough. He had a really hard time with Siakam, which isn't really a surprise, but 23 Siakam points on 8 of 13 shooting. Dude. Siakam is just like, he would even have like a good game, but he was able to get to the line like basically kind of whenever he wanted to here, and he made 8 of his 10 free throws, and that's like one of the reasons why Toronto wins this game. Toronto had doubled up the Cavs in terms of free throw attempts, and that's a big reason why they end up winning this game. I thought Love was still really good. I think one of the things we're seeing, and I've seen some people tweet this, but the post ups with him are not like a great use of a possession. So like, if you look at what they are for the year overall, Cavs are averaging 3.8. He's scoring about 3.8 points per game on post-ups, comparatively to like guys that are like elite at that. Joel Embiid's at like 7.8 per game. Anthony Davis is at 4.9. So if you look at like his assist numbers and whatnot, like Kevin is, averaging the same number in assists per turnovers per game. He's not like really doing very, like, it's not like this is yielding a bunch, but you still, and this is on about 7 post-ups per game. So if you're saying it's 7 post-ups per game, they're getting, that 3.8 points. That's not great. That's not the most efficient thing you could find in the world. But when you think about like what he is able to, what defense to still react to it, that is a positive, and the Cavs do take advantage of that, and I like that, to lean on that. Again, it's not the most efficient thing in the world, the way basketball is played now. It just can't be. He's by far the best at it on the team. It's like not even close. He's the only one that I would ever try to run a post up for on this Cavs roster. But there are limits to it, but I think defense still react to Kevin Love when he does that, and I think leaning on that at times when you need to generate good offense, it's just good coaching by John Beilein.
I agree. It may not be the most efficient thing to do for the Cavs, but they have to find something that works. And if it's working, why try to deviate or break away from it? I guess is what I'm trying to get at with this. And I don't know. I don't know how much time Kevin has left here. He could be moved this time. Well, less than this day. It's less than a week at this point until the trade deadline. If you really want to like include the hours in this, but I don't know. I think I'm just totally fine with the way Kevin's being utilized. Like, if it's just a wrinkle in Cleveland's offense that just kind of works for the time being, just stick with it and roll with it. And then you kind of figure it out if he's no longer here, or I don't know. It's just definitely interesting to see. But like, I think no, Baylor. This is just it was just a fun game overall. We were talking before we started recording where I said like there was a point where Toronto was pulling away a little bit, and I kind of like mentally tuned out, and I was just kind of typing away on my computer on a story I'm working on. And then I heard John Michael kind of getting a little excited, and I like tuned back in. And yeah, I just, Toronto's the defending champs. I'm kind of not flabbergasted because they're such a well-coached team, but I am surprised at how well they're playing. Sans Kawhi Leonard, and I mean, Danny Green as well was a big part of that team last year. But no, it just kind of doesn't feel like, at least I thought Toronto was going to be one of those teams where they'd be just thinking about blowing it up and trying to move Marc Gasol and Kyle Lowry and just kind of building for the future. But no, they're still in the thick of things in the East, and they may not get very far because Milwaukee is like the elite of the elite when it comes to the Eastern Conference talent, and Philly is going to be a really scary seventh seed just because of their injuries. But no, it was I'm just totally glad the Cavs were able to hang in this one, and unfortunately Toronto wins the season series 3-0, but it is what it is, and I'll take it.
Two things I will say that were, I think that comes out as like a negative of this game. I thought that the turnovers in general were a problem. 21 turnovers for the Cavs leads to 25 Raptors points. Kevin Porter Jr. in particular had 7, just had some really errant passes, just some stuff where I think if he's playing a little slower and it gets more comfortable, that'll get better. Garland had 1 late, and I think there's just some learning. Learning moment from some of these late game and mistakes and the amount of turnovers. Like, you're hoping you learn from some of that stuff. And then the other thing is just something that I noted coming in. Toronto was 7th in the league in points per possession off of live rebounds. They ended up scoring about according to the cleaning. This is according to cleaning the glass. So in this one, they're at 1.5 points per 100 possessions. That's above their season average by 0.2. Basically, like, they're getting rebounds and they're able to get them on the floor. We know transition defense is like a really big problem for the Cavs. It's just something they're not good at. It's Zach Lowe wrote really, really well about this in his 10 things column last week. So please go look that up and read it. You might have missed that column, and that should be in your reading rotation anyway. But the Cavs are not good at that. Toronto really took advantage of that. The Cavs, had some moments where they responded, and I thought their resiliency in this game was pretty good. You know, I think other times this year or last year, this team again gets punched in the face like this at times, quits, and doesn't come all the way back. Like, they had a chance to win this late if some things break the other way. That's all you can ask for. But some of the things that I think you could have that it would have been a little better is if they're going to improve towards the rest of this year. I think that would be just a thing to keep an eye on, is if can they get better at stopping teams off of rebounds and just kind of being ready to play defense the moment teams are ready to push down the floor. This game, I have to go back and just kind of look and see some of the stuff in this game, because there for a while, like, it was really a second half turnaround for Toronto in that regard. So I want to see what changed on a rewatch, but that was the thing. The other thing is, too, just a quick thing. I really would have liked Dylan Windler in this game. This is just one of those games where him not playing, and a lot of people have noted this on Twitter. A lot of people in Cavs Twitter have said this about this game in particular for whatever reason, but I do feel Dylan in this one. I feel like he would have just been like a nice, fun addition to what they were doing in this particular game.
Yeah, no, I'd agree on both of those fronts. And the turnovers thing, like, if you want to break down the nitty-gritty of it, Colin led the team. Well, actually, no, that's a lie. Kevin Porter led the team with 7 turnovers, and then behind him was Colin with 4, Darius with 2, well, Tristan with 3, Darius with 2. And then, like, you're seeing a lot of these younger guys who are getting more of this responsibility and ball handling duties. Like, that's fine. Like, I don't think turnovers have been a consistent problem for the Cavs the entire season, and I don't think it's going to change anytime soon just because of the youth and experience on this roster. So, as much as it drives Bayline up a wall, because I think most of his post-game pressers that I sit in on, if the Cavs have a high turnover rate or just too many turnovers that night, that's like one thing he touches on, is like, we need to fix this bad habit. And at the same time, like, it could be fixable, but also it's just inexperience. The fact that Toronto has a good mix of just really savvy veterans and teams, they're a team with a lot of experience just together in chemistry. So no, but yeah, no, I would agree on the Dylan Windler thing as well. Especially with like how that bench unit was just clicking overall. I do think about it a lot, actually, because we're starting to see the team at relatively full health, Brandon Knight and Ante Zizek at this point are the only two players that will crack Cleveland's rotation again that are currently out. So if in the grand scheme of things, I don't think either of them even bother with the rotation. And then at that point, if Windler's healthy the entire season, I don't think McKinney would be playing either. And no, I think it just would have been fun. I think his three-point shooting, just like a little bit of the offensive wrinkle that, granted, it's off limited summer league film that we saw like as Cavs fans. And then if you watch his tape at Belmont, I think just the offensive wrinkle he provides would have made this game a lot more fun, a lot more interesting, and maybe a few more shots fall Cleveland's way to make this actually a win. But that's okay. There's always next year, right? And hopefully, it's just like the mantra in Cleveland sports. It's like people joke about it, but it's actually serious. Like, there's always next year, and hopefully Dylan's at full health then, and this stress reaction in his leg is just a thing that's behind him at this point. But makes me nervous, though. You know, leg injuries always make me nervous when it comes to athletes.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's about right. Okay, we're going to be right back, and then we're going to talk about the All-Star game. No Cavs in it, but we'll talk about some of the things, some of the things going on with that, and what Cavs we could see on All-Star weekend. We'll be right back with more Locked On Cavs. Evan, we're back. Okay, so no Cavs make the All-Star game. We'll get to our talk on the snubs here in a minute, but I would say this: if I'm gonna pick any people that are gonna end up being the Cavs on All-Star Weekend, it is Colin Sexton, and then I think KPJ would be number two.
You know, I think we're both on the same page here. Last season, I'm still a little annoyed by this that Kevin Knox got into the Rising Stars game over Colin, because Kevin Knox wasn't very good. I mean, granted, leading up to the All-Star break, Colin wasn't the greatest either, but he's like one of those players. It's a cliche, but he uses his haters as motivation. I think him getting snubbed is what kind of had him have that like stellar turnaround post All-Star break, and kind of led in a little bit to this year, why he came in so motivated just to play with a chip on his shoulder. But no, statistically, Kevin Knox is the worst player in the NBA this year. So I think Colin has this locked up. Again, I would be surprised if he doesn't, but weirder things that happen. But no, I'm by the time this is out, the Forbes piece will be out as well. I'm actually writing about how Kevin Porter should be in the Rising Stars game with Colin as well, because shouts to Chris Fedor. He already posted a piece today about Colin. I'm like, you know, everyone's trying to make this case. I thought Kevin as well. I'm like, you and I both agree, and I think the majority of folks would agree that Kevin has been Cleveland's best rookie this year. And if you start to break down his draft class actually across the board, I mean, obviously, I think Zion and Ja out of this rookie class will make the Rising Stars game, because either off of name appeal and star power from that fact, or the fact that Ja has a name, star power, and the fact that he's statistically the best rookie this season. I think those two, and then like you start to break down the list a little bit, you can say like Tyler Herro has a case, Brandon Clark, I mean, has been awesome for the Grizzlies, and then you keep going down the list, and then like KPJ, like you could make a serious case for him to be in the Rising Stars game, and I think he'd be fun. I think his style of play is fun and exciting enough that, especially in a game where there's zero defense, he can kind of show off why he was known for his dunking ability going like out of Southern Cal and everything, and like just some of those exciting factors. But other than that, Darius Garland, I don't think will get it, just because he's kind of had like an up and down rookie year at this point. And I think Spencer Davies, shout out to Spencer, noted that pregame, Bayline and the coaching staff approached Darius about giving him the night off the other night, because one, they asked him because like he's still kind of getting over being sick, and two, they noticed statistically he's having a bit of a regression. I just think like him hitting this rookie role right now and him having an up and down rookie year will keep him out of it, which is fine. It is what it is. But I guess before I pass it over to you, I will say I did fail as a co-host of this podcast not getting Kevin Love in to the All-Star game as a final goodbye, but I think he's going to be here in Cleveland through the summer, so it's not goodbye yet. It's just I'll see you hopefully in the All-Star game next year with a different team.
Cue the I'll see you, Chris. cue the "I'll See You Again" song from Fantastic what's that?
The Fast and Furious.
Yeah,
I mean, cue it up. Let's get that. Sad scene. Yeah, let's get real sad.
Yeah, shouts faster. But okay, so my thing with y'all, I think that's right about Garland. I don't think I think Kevin Love's been decent this year. I don't think I think Beal and LaVine are probably. I think Beal in particular has got to be ahead of him. Jaylen Brown would be ahead of him too. If you're just hanging pure,
Are we just talking in the East right now?
I mean, yeah, because it's well, okay. I would say like those are the guys that have to be ahead of him. You know,
I would say if we're doing across the NBA, I'd say Beal and Booker, and then maybe.
Oh yeah, Brown. If it's across the NBA, Booker's more deserving. You know, I think there are probably some other guys out west you could probably make good arguments for, like Paul George, even though he hasn't played as much.
Yeah,
I think in the East, I think Beal. I think there's an argument at least for LaVine. I think Jaylen Brown, especially if you're going to reward winning in some way, I think those guys are certainly going to be a little bit ahead. And it's you know gets a little bit thin at some point. You know, like Bam making it, I think certainly limit like would take away. It means there's one less kind of candidate, but it doesn't. I don't know how many guys are not going to play. You know, it's sort of unclear to me like how many guys are going to sit the game out or anything like that. I think it's fine. Like I'm not aggrieved that Kevin Love didn't make the All-Star game. You know, I think I don't even know what to make like. There are other guys I'm more aggrieved for, and I also just don't like. I'm sort of glad I don't have to like try to recap the All-Star game after the crazy rule changes.
Yeah, dude, those... Okay, so did you get the
email from the NBA, too? I don't even know what they mean. I've read them. I don't know what they mean.
I do, too. And maybe Adam Silver does not jump on every wild and zany idea of his. And shout-outs to... I think you should leave the parody account, but, like, underrated Netflix show, mind you, but... they tweeted about the whole All-Star game thing. It's like the chunky bit where at the end of each quarter is like, now he's going to gobble up all your points. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, I think it's great that they're doing it for charity or whatever, but the overall format's just silly. And if the NBA is already struggling to get people to like watch basketball this year, and I feel like the overlying theme of All-Star Weekend is going to be Kobe and everything, so a lot of people will be too. It's just like, I don't care. Just have a normal format. It's a glorified dunk contest, and people start caring about midway through the fourth quarter, the beginning of the fourth quarter defensively. And, like, I mentally check out if it's going to have some stupid rules that I don't understand. And then the NBA sends me, like, a 2-page PDF, and I'm already under the weather. So I'm, like, looking at this. I'm like, this is too long for me to read. So I'll just let somebody else who will break it down for me like I'm in 10th grade again. But... if we're talking about like all-star snubs, just to jump back on that, across the NBA, Bradley Beal for sure is one, Zach Levine's one, Jaylen Brown is one, Devin Booker is the biggest one for me, but I think DeMar DeRozan got rocked too. I was surprised he didn't get in. I was surprised Brandon Ingram got it, but I did tweet this before, like right when they announced it. I said, well, that's like kind of like he's definitely not going to be a Cavalier next year. And you and I would keep talking on this, but like the dream is officially dead at this point of the year, where early on I thought Brandon Ingram could be a Cav because they didn't extend him a qualifying offer, but whatevs. I don't know. Yeah, no, I don't think Kevin Rever really had a legitimate shot. I think that was just me trying to be funny, but I don't know. Like you said, there's plenty of players at this point, especially if they factor in winning as well. And I mean, for Bradley Beal, he's just statistically a very good player, so you have to kind of throw the whole winning thing out the window with him. But, Kevin's not going to make it. Hopefully Kevin Porter and Sexton are the Rising Stars game, but when it comes to Cleveland stuff, it's going to be a pretty quiet All-Star weekend, I'd say, which probably is for the best.
I'm happy about it. It's good for me.
I mean, I guess I can't write like those stupid clickbaity articles that say like so-and-so was snubbed from the All-Star game and here's five reasons why. It's just, that's easy content. But I am surprised that people are offended that like Domantas Sabonis made the All-Star game. I thought that, I mean, like I looked at the list today when they announced it and I'm like, you know what, that's I agree with everybody who made the All-Star game. Like good call. And then people like Devin Booker didn't make it and Russell Westbrook shouldn't have. And I'm like, well, Russ is a volume scorer, but he's also averaging off the top of my head like 26 points on 45% shooting and 7 rebounds and 6 assists. You can flip those numbers if I'm wrong, but you know what? Nobody's perfect. And it's fun to speculate on who didn't get this right, but I don't know. It should be a fun time, and thankfully, like you said, maybe it'll be nice for us to kind of keep it low-key for a little bit, and then we can talk about all the new additions, hopefully, that the Cavs make right at the trade deadline or before that.
Yeah, we'll see if they do anything. We'll see if they do anything particularly of note. Any player in particular, Evan, as we get out of here, that you're most excited to see on All-Star Weekend? Like, that you're just happy that that player, for whatever reason, has made it?
People need to appreciate Chris Middleton more, and this is, I don't know, I like Chris Middleton as a player a lot, and people really complained about how Milwaukee, quote-unquote, cheaped out to get rid of Brogdon this summer by trading him to Indiana, but as we saw, I think it was it last, we're recording this on a Thursday, was it last night when Middleton dropped a career high, or is it Tuesday night when he dropped the career high?
I think it was Tuesday, but I might be wrong.
Either way, I have noticed that I think not getting rid of, but removing Brogdon from the equation, because it doesn't sound as harsh as saying getting rid of, has kind of unlocked Chris Middleton's game a lot. And I think he's just an underrated player that kind of goes underappreciated. Granted, he did have a little bit of a disappearing act in the playoffs at one point in his career, but I have told Ty Windish this a lot of times, and Ty's like my go-to guy when it comes to the Bucks stuff. And like anyone who covers the Bucks, I usually just say this a lot, and they think they agree with me that if I could clone Chris Middleton 29 extra times and put him on every roster in the NBA, you'd make every roster in the NBA better just because of what he brings to the table. So I'm happy he made it. When it comes to the reserves, I think he's deserving. But what about you, Chris? Who do you think out of the reserves was the most deserving to get the nod?
I'm just really excited to see Bam. I love Bam. Bam is what I'd want in a modern center in a lot of ways.
Still not used to his name being Bam, because every time somebody says Bam, I think of Bam or Jared first.
Or you think of like Emeril Lagasse, like Bam. I think Chris Paul. Look, I'm nothing if I'm not for obscure cuts. I'm pro Kyle Lowry. I think Dame Lillard is having like a wild season that not enough people are talking about.
Yeah.
He's been great. On a human level, I'm really happy for Rudy Gobert.
And too, now his mom will be disappointed in him, which I guess is nice.
And he got $1 million for making it, which like $1 million is nice.
Oh yeah, definitely.
That's a good thing. But that's gonna be it for today's show. Evan's gonna go get well. I'm gonna talk to Wes Goldberg about Cavs Warriors. Evan, as always, thanks for coming on and helping me break this down, buddy.
Oh, no problem. Like I said, the Chase Down podcast can't kill me yet. I ain't going anywhere. And we'll be back Saturday hanging out at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse watching the Cavs play their old buddies, the Warriors, which will be a fun time.
Yes, we'll have something after that game, probably with Wes is kind of the plan, which I'm really excited about. I'm very excited. Wes and I've been blog boys together, although he's like a legit human being now for a long time, and it'll be good to link up with him, which will be fun. But you're going to hear him talk now, and then we'll talk to you again Saturday night with a quick little hitter on something on Cavs Warriors. But we'll talk to you then, and thanks for listening. And if you have if you guys have your favorite All-Stars, please let us know and perhaps we'll respond to those come on. If you have a argument for Kevin Love to make the All-Star game, share that with us as well. And maybe we'll share the best one come on day. Yes. But that'll be it for Evan and I, and now myself and Wes. Joining me now, he's currently in Boston recording this a couple of days before the Cavs play the Warriors. In Cleveland is Wes Goldberg, a writer covering the Warriors for the Mercury News, also hosts co-host Locked On Warriors, and is one of the hosts on the main Locked On NBA show. Wes, how's it going, buddy?
Going well. I mean, it's freezing here in Boston. I'm originally from Florida, so I'm not used to this stuff, but I'm gonna try to power through.
What has for you this Warrior season? What has been the story of this Warrior season with Curry out, With all these different guys and with D'Angelo Russell in there, what has the story to you been for this team?
Pretty much twofold. I think the story not only is it's the first year at Chase Center, right? Which is a really big deal for a team that had been in Oracle for nearly 50 years, won a bunch of championships, and then moves from Oakland to San Francisco. So locally, that's been a really big story for us. But you couple that with the fact that the team's just really not good in its first year at the new arena, and that's basically been the story. And how this Warriors team, so used to competing for championships, had to pivot so early in what their expectations for the season was going to be. I mean, Steph Curry breaks his hand in the fourth game of the year. And, you know, even before that, there were definitely tempered expectations. But ever since then, they basically said, you know what, let's focus on next year and you know, sort of rebuilding the depth and adding some youth and kind of focusing on what they believe is their championship window of like the next 3 or 4 years.
What has the Draymond Green year been? Obviously, you said some very poignant, I think, emotional comments about Kobe Bryant that I think everyone should go check out. But when you think about his season and him playing in the context of this very different team than the one he's really thrived in the last couple of years and, you know, been one of the best players in the league on the last couple of years, what has this season been like for Draymond specifically?
It's been frustrating for him. I mean, he's got 12 technicals already this season, 4 more, and he gets suspended. So there's the proof right there. But, you know, I think for him, he's gone from being able to play with guys like Steph and KD and Clay to, you know, not playing with those guys and having to now teach guys. I mean, practices for the Warriors used to, you know, be few and far between. They used to be short. They used to be smooth. It was more about, you know, managing the health of their superstars. And now these practices are teaching these young players who are 22, 21 years old, how to be NBA basketball players. And Draymond's had a really big part of that. It's not just Steve Kerr and the coaching staff. I mean, Draymond Green has been instrumental in coaching those young guys, and a lot of them look up to him. So it's been an adjustment just from a leadership standpoint from him. I mean, he's, you know, you hear that cliche thrown around. He's like the heart and soul of the team and everything like that. And, you know, that fiery temperament that he has been helpful for the Warriors, I think, in a macro sense. But this is sort of the first year where he's had to take on that sort of teaching role. And it's shown sort of a new version of leadership for him.
So how does this team play? Like, what is like this team's identity?
They are trying to figure that out currently. It's kind of something that's changed throughout the year. I mean, Steph Curry went down and they went into a pick and roll heavy offense with D'Angelo Russell because naturally that's just what sort of made sense. And then D'Angelo Russell got hurt with a hand injury and missed a bunch of games. And they said, well, we don't really have a pick and roll ball handle anymore. So let's go back to our motion principles and just have Draymond Green basically play point guard. And since the last week or so, it's sort of been now an amalgamation of those two things, where Draymond Green and D'Angelo Russell are the primary ball handlers, and they switch off as such pretty often. And they've actually developed a nice little two-man game here, and D'Angelo Russell's playing much better off the ball, which has been an encouraging development for the Warriors. And so, it's still the last-rated offense in the league right now, and it has been for over a month. So they still struggle to score points, but they're at least figuring out a system. They're at least figuring out a way to go to work. And I think that's going to be important for them to get out of that hole. Defensively, they're a little bit below league average. They had a nice little stretch at the end of December, but they want to lean on their defense a little bit more, try to play in half-court sets and score more points offensively.
He is not playing, I believe, on Wednesday, but it's been reported that Kevon Looney is going to be back at some point during this current road trip. When he gets back, let's say it is Saturday or if it's not, whatever, what will getting him back act? Do you think that will help them in any kind of notable way?
No, I really don't. I mean, the guy's played 10 games this year, and he's so out of sorts, man. It's just like the conditioning isn't there. His body is just completely broken down this year. It's just like, this just is not the year for Kevon Looney, really. Like, I understand the motivation to get him back on the court, to, you know, get him confident in his own body again, but it almost feels like, man, do you just shut this whole thing down? Like, I don't even know, but It's been a real trying year for him and frustrating for him and the team. I mean, he's fresh off of signing a 3-year, $15 million contract. And then this happens. That's tough, I think, for everybody involved. But when he's been on the court, he's been a negative just because, again, he's not in playing shape. It's been impossible for him to get into playing shape with all these injuries.
There is this different cast of Warriors this year. I mean, like, you have Eric Pascal as a rookie, Omari Spellman, Glenn Robinson, former Cav Alec Burks. Aside from D'Angelo Russell, obviously, was a big free agency signing. Who is, like, the random or new guy into this Warriors group that you have found has been, like, a kind of the most notable, kind of most interesting one to kind of observe and kind of break down?
Oh, there's a lot of them, man. I think Eric Pascal, especially in the beginning of the year, he's got a really interesting isolation game, and they're very, very bullish on Pascal as a long-term piece. I have some major questions with his game, most notably that he struggles to facilitate, and he turns the ball over more often than he records an assist, which is problematic in the Warriors' motion offense if they want to get back to those principles, which they do. Alan Smilagic, who is not going to be playing against Cleveland, but he's a 19-year-old center, mostly playing in the G League this year. They are extremely high on long-term. But as far as the guys who are going to be involved in the game in Cleveland, I'd probably say Eric Pascal is the guy to keep an eye on because he's an isolation type of scorer, grew up in upstate New York. He kind of has that, you know, that's all you really have to say to kind of describe his game. He's got that bully ball New York kind of street ball game. And he can go off for, you know, 20 to 30 points on a night. But then there are nights where he kind of just goes, you know, 2 for 9 for, you know, 6 points or whatever, and that's it.
Oh, lastly, what is the thing you are most looking forward to seeing Saturday in Cleveland? It's an 8 p.m. tip. It's a very different Cavs Warriors game than we've seen the last several years. Obviously, it has a different tone. These are two teams near the bottom of the league right now. But what is something you're looking forward to seeing in this particular incarnation of the matchup?
Oh, boy, it's not going to be like the old days, is it? But I think for the Warriors, you look at what, I mean, they're going through a tough stretch right now. They've lost 14 of their last 15, I believe. They have a whole bunch. I mean, they're on a 5-city road trip right now that started in Philadelphia, is in Boston, goes to Cleveland, then goes to Washington, D.C., and then goes to Brooklyn. And if you kind of look at their calendars, if they want to kind of get off the schneid here, it's going to be basically Cleveland and Washington, D.C., I think, are going to be the two cities where they could do it. So that's what I'm interested to see is can the Warriors put a game together and take advantage of a similarly bad team? And if they can't, I'd be interested to see what that locker room is like afterwards because it'll be a blown opportunity and they'll know it.
Do you think it'll be weird? I mean, I wonder if Draymond will be candid about this once you get there, but I wonder, I'll be curious to see what he in particular is, how he sort of reacts to like being back in this place. He's won multiple titles in, you know, and it's just like such a different vibe. You know, I wonder what that will sort of be like. I'm curious to see what kind of reaction he gets from the crowd as well.
Yeah. I mean, do you think the crowd will even care? Like,
yeah, I think Draymond's forever a heel.
Okay, then perfect. I'm excited to see that then. I mean, maybe Draymond Green gets really frustrated, you know, knowing that he wants to beat Cleveland every time he has a chance, whether he's playing in the finals or just playing a regular season game in January. You know, between him and Kevin Love, that's two star players who are going to still be involved in this thing that sort of inspire those memories of those finals matchups. So, and they play the same position, obviously. So, you know, at least we'll still have that, I guess.
Yeah, the last memory I have of those two teams playing, because I didn't go to the Cavs-Warriors game in Cleveland last year, but I distinctly remember the KD, the one KD game winner that he just like stuck over LeBron, and then I remember being there for their last finals win, and it's like JaVale McGee, it's like 2:30 in the morning, and JaVale McGee is just like drinking two bottles of champagne, really just enjoying himself in the bottom of the queue. And Draymond and Iguodala and those guys all just like being very comfortable in that spot. That's like my lasting memory of that. And this is gonna have a very, very different tone. I wonder what Steve Kerr will have to say about that as well. Cause he, as you know, this year on the beat now, he is a very introspective guy. And I'll be curious if he has any like just kind of acknowledges that it's kind of like a very different circumstance to come here, considering all the classic games that have been played in that arena, all the crazy things that have happened. Not just the finals, but like that classic Christmas Day game from a couple years ago. And this is like very different teams at very different stages.
It's, you know, you can kind of, if you're Steve Kerr, you can get very deep involved in the day-to-day process of just coaching this team. But I do think when you, if you're him and you go back to Cleveland to play the Cavaliers, it will be a reminder of how far that the Warriors have basically fallen within a matter of a year. You know, they lose the finals to Toronto, obviously. They shut down Oracle that way in a way that they hoped they hadn't. They move to a new arena. They have the worst record in the NBA right now. I mean, it all happens so fast. And he's mentioned it a few times. He's talked about that a lot. But to actually be in Cleveland, where they experience the highest of their highs, and right now they're at the lowest of their lows, it will be probably a surreal experience for him.
Again, you can find Wes Goldberg on Twitter at WC Goldberg. That's still your handle, correct?
Correct.
And you can find his writing at the Mercury News, where he covers the Warriors, and also hear his voice on Locked On Warriors and the Locked On NBA. Wes, as always, thanks for coming on.
Good times.